그걸 try well like to feel.
40 minutes now, and I can hear Dalton Thieneman, my usual co-host, screaming at me that I haven't asked you about your 2018 season. For you guys to come, I think you lost, what, quarterfinals of the indoors?
Quarterfinals of the indoors to UCLA.
And then
lost a tough doubles point, and they kind of ran away with it at the end. I thought it was pretty surprising. And going into the 2018 semifinals at the NCAAs, we were hoping for a nice day, but usually we're hoping to be inside against the UCLA. So
yeah, and so, you know, just talking about your run throughout the year, you know, coming into the year, there were as high as expectations can really be. You bring in a guy like John McNally, who, as you mentioned, is one of those guys who played pro events, you know, has won a Kalamazoo, has been everywhere you can be in the junior tennis world. To bring him in, to bring back a Torpegaard, a Wolf, a Joyce, all of these guys. What was it like coaching this team with those expectations all year long?
You know, it's difficult. You know, everybody's, this could be the year, this could be the year, this is the year, blah, blah, blah. you know, nothing's easy. I mean, we just stick to the same thing. We want to overachieve, and we want seniors to have their best year. If seniors can have their best year, which Mendez did, which Torpegaard did, it's going to lead to good things. So, you know, we try to play the toughest schedule possible to get us ready. I think after we played Mississippi State, we had played every team that was in the quarterfinals of the NCAA tournament.
That's good scheduling, so, coach.
And you know, so I'm sitting there, you know, and all we care about is the development and getting better, you know, with every match. But we knew that we were in the hunt if we could win some doubles points. And we knew that we had some experience all up and down the lineup. And we had a chance to to do some good things. But, you know, nothing's easy. I'll say it again. There's Wake Forest could have been, you know, and they're at home, so that's going to help Wake Forest. But, you know, I feel there were you could go into the teens and you could find some teams that were, you know, every bit as good as teams that were in the semifinals who lost in the round of 16. So each match, it's a different day, and it's a new challenge of getting guys rested and getting guys ready. But, you know, early on in the year, we knew there were 10 or 12 teams that we were putting ourselves in position to play them all and putting ourselves in tough environments, like the environment we put our guys into at University of Georgia. We went to University of Georgia. We hadn't been outside in a while. This was the beginning of March. It was a bad winter all through the country, and we show up at University of Georgia, get there 48 hours early so we can practice outside and get 5 or 6 hours of practice time before we play that match, and all of a sudden it's raining for 40 straight hours.
Of course.
And so we play inside, practice inside. It looks like this match could be indoors 2 hours before the match. Boom. It's beautiful weather. And University of Georgia has 20 guys with squeegees, and they're making sure this match is going to be outdoors. So we go out there and haven't hit a ball really outside, and we find ourselves in a very, very tough match, which we lost 4-0. It was it's all part of the process of having the best schedule and putting your guys in tough situations that you'll be able to draw on, and as the season keeps going on and on. And you know, after losing that Georgia match, we're pretty sad, and you know, but the coaches are, you know, we're feeling pretty good because we've been there, but the guys are, you know, shocked. I can't believe that just happened. And we've got USC staring us in the face in Southern Cal. And all of a sudden, it's 3-3, last match on the court, and it's John McNally, and anything can happen, like you alluded to earlier, in a 3-3 match. And John McNally, as a true freshman, comes through after two or three rain delays. It was kind of like the UCLA match at the NCAAs. It probably lasted 7 or 8 hours, and John McNally pulled through, and we won 4-3. We pack up the stuff, we go get a night's rest, and we travel over to a private club to play Arizona State the next day. And again, a little bit of rain, a little bit of the rain delay, and we come through against a tough Arizona State team on some courts we've never played on, who there aren't adequate lights, and we're playing under the lights, and I'm sitting there thinking I'm the worst coach in the country. We had this great win against USC. Nobody beat Southern Cal at Southern Cal. And here we did it. Now I've got them playing less than 24 hours later at a club in LA against a very, very good Arizona State team. And, you know, we were able to pull out a 4-2 victory with J.J. Wolf. You know, Gertz beats Torpegaard, and J.J. Wolf comes through to we've got our two young guys on the court, Wolf and McNally, and we're up 3-2. And, you know, Wolf comes through with a great win, and I think McNally was maybe at 1-1 in the third when Wolf got the final point against Arizona State. And but we're coming out of there, and we're feeling darn good. But who do you have staring yourself in the face? You got University of Michigan coming to town in 5 days. They've got 4 or 5 seniors.
Here we go. Here we go.
And, you know, they're a great team who's having a wonderful season. And, you know, we knew it was going to be another battle. And we were able to pull through. You know, we won that match. But obviously, you know, it's a tight match. It might have been 4-1. But
close doubles point, right? Lost it right at the end. Yeah,
it means a lot. Michigan's very good doubles, well coached.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. We were at home, and, you know, that was nice after playing Georgia, USC, and Arizona State on the road to be able to sneak into Michigan State on a Friday coming out of that trip and beat Michigan State and then have to hustle back to play Michigan at noon and being tired from the traveling and being outside and now being indoors and, you know, got a great crowd and was able to pull through a match against a top 10 team in Michigan at home. So, you know, the scheduling kind of worked out for us and the fact that we had Michigan at home this year. And, you know, then we're on to the Big Ten season and very good. But we got ourselves caught in a war at University of Minnesota. And, wow, we were lucky. Two of our guys ended up with the stomach flu. Torpegaard and Joyce hadn't eaten in 36 hours before we played University of Minnesota. And we ended up sliding by the skin of our teeth. And it was, you know, a darn good match. But, you know, then off to Wisconsin, then, you know, a home match against Illinois. And they came in as, I think, a top 8 team in the country. And that match started outside and finished indoors. And we were able to get through them. And, you know, that meant a lot because, you know, everybody's pretty good. You know, the Big Ten's, you know, pretty strong. But, you know, for us personally, we were trying desperately to stay away from having to play in Illinois or Michigan in the semifinals of the Big Ten, even though our toughest match during the season had been Minnesota. So
I really think it wouldn't shock – so you guys finished the season 34-3? I think you can name all 34 wins. I really do.
I could name all 34 wins. That's what I'm supposed to be able to do.
Not to cut you off. I don't mean to be rude. I'm just – it's impressive. It's photographic, your memory of this season. It's very impressive.
So, you know, so we get there, and another war against Minnesota in the semifinals of the Big Ten. And, you know, Corwin ends up taking out Torpegaard. J.J. Wolf has a nice win over Matic Speck, who was a senior from Minnesota, from Slovenia.
Of course.
And he was able to pull through after getting taking a pretty good beating. You know, Speck beat Wolf pretty handedly at Minnesota. So to see JJ was playing some unbelievable tennis at that time, and he pulled us through in that match with a win over Speck, who was undefeated, I think, in the Big Ten season. And, you know, and then we're playing Illinois. They slid by Michigan in the semifinals, and we're playing Illinois. And we win a tight doubles point, and then probably played the best hour and 15 minutes of our season in the singles. And I think we got six first sets on Illinois, which in the last 20 years really never happens. And so we're feeling pretty darn good. And then, of course, like you are in, as a coach, you're always in a bad mood. The NCAA draw comes out with complaining, oh, my goodness, East Tennessee State, they're a top 3-4 seed. How did we get East Tennessee State? Here's Kentucky playing Virginia Tech. We slid by Kentucky in a midweek match in April at Kentucky, 4-2, by winning 4-3 with McNally and Wolf. Of course, 2-3 for us to win a match. Kentucky had just lost 2 days ago, 4-3 to Texas A&M, which I think they had a match point to win that match. So, you know, we're feeling pretty darn good, but, like, it's my job to always be grumpy. I'm sitting there, you know, and Justin's sitting there, and we're thinking, you know, Jimmy, Tennessee State's a good 4 team, and we're going to have to probably play Kentucky in the second round, and that was a battle, and we're looking at everybody else's draws, and we're doing what tennis coaches do best, complain and act soft when we're trying to make our guys act tough. And, you know, we all of a sudden, usually when you have that 12-day break between playing in the Big Ten Conference Final to playing your first round of the NCAA, you have had 12 days off and 4 months of without matches, so you always have a little bit of rust. So when we kind of mugged East Tennessee State in the first round and we didn't seem to have much rust on us, I started to feel pretty good, and then we beat up on Kentucky pretty well, and we're sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, look at that, Minnesota just beat Georgia, we knew they were good, and then all of a sudden we're watching Minnesota beat Oklahoma 4-0, you know, we're thinking, wow, this is pretty good, but then I'm thinking, oh my goodness, maybe in the past 2.5 months, Minnesota's played us the toughest, so now we've got to go play them in the round of 16, but we're thinking, you know what, we're going to North Carolina, and the NCAA never wants to play any of the final 16 indoors, we're going to be outdoors against Minnesota, and that's what we want. Can't wait to get there and play Minnesota outdoors. And we look at the forecast, and it says rain in Winston-Salem for 7 straight days, and again, I'm mad again. Cronoggy's mad, and Schilling's running around saying you two are always mad, and, you know, and next thing you know, we get to Winston-Salem for the round of 16, and we're staring at Minnesota, and when you know, here we go indoors, and we're a little bit nervous because we believe that 1, 2, and 3, you know, at positions 1, 2, and 3, Minnesota's a top 10 team. I've got two seniors in Corwin and Schmeck who are the real deal, and their third player had won the region, the regional in the fall. And so we knew and that guy at point number 3 had beat McNally in the first match and was up 7-6, and McNally was up 4-3 when the match ended against Minnesota in the semifinals. So we knew we had our hands full and got out and got the doubles point, and all of a sudden we were in a battle for the first 60 minutes of that match, and all of a sudden, you know, guy stepped up, Torp won a tough tiebreaker in the first set, Corwin was shocked, kind of moody, whatever it was, Corwin kind of didn't get back up on the horse, and Torp got a 4-0 lead, and from there we were able to beat Minnesota, but it was a much tougher match than the score showed, and then we up against Mississippi State, who had won the SEC championship. They had a doubles team, I think, that was 19-1 at number 2 doubles, and then they had the number 1 doubles team in the country in the rankings with Borges and his partner, so we knew we were in for a war in doubles, and, you know, they got the doubles point on us, and they're up 1-0, and I think we said that wasn't the point we thought we had. We thought we had 4 or 5 points in singles, so guys, don't you worry about anything. Let's get off to some fast starts, and you know, and then all of a sudden we were in a big-time battle. And
I was at that Ohio State-Mississippi State match, and I saw you guys huddling after the doubles point, and to me, it looked like you were really lighting into the guys. You know, what goes on in a team huddle like that, if you don't mind, you know, you don't have to give us specifics, but what are you telling the guys, you know, going down 1-0 to a team like Mississippi State?
Well, obviously, you know, we were letting them know that, you know, we weren't happy with, you know, a couple of the points here or there, and that we couldn't have slip-ups when we had chances to win sets or, you know, break serve or win some games. And we needed guys to obviously get off to a fast start, and we knew which courts that we felt we had the chances to be successful. And so you're positioning coaches in areas where you think the match is going to come down to. We put two guys up on the bank, so we left two coaches up there at the top with Joy, with Schilling and Kronagy going with Torpegaard, McNally, and Joyce at 1, 3, and 5. And I went to the bottom at 2, 4, and 6, trying to search for you know, a point or two that you know, could make a difference. And all of a sudden, you know, Kyle Seelig got out to a great start on Braun, who was one of their best players. And, you know, he was actually up 6-1, 4-0. Next thing you know, he's in a tiebreaker in the second set. We need that tiebreaker desperately. And Seelig played a great tiebreaker and got the point. And J.J. Wolf was in the battle with an Italian boy, Orandini, who, you know, got the first set. Somehow he slipped through and went on a set that J.J. should have won. And he got the set. And Tuber was struggling at 6, so I kind of positioned myself between Seelig and Wolf, and looking at the scoreboard, I knew that we were looking pretty good at 3 and 5, and we were looking pretty good at court 4. So, you know, that's a good feeling for a coach when you have a Torpegaard at 1, because he's won a lot of big matches, and he was able to maybe hit the best shot in the history of Ohio State tennis. I think it was 1-0 deuce. Borges hits a second serve, and Torpegaard hits a 140-mile-an-hour forehand winner. He just went for it.
I remember the shot.
The funny thing about it, on his second match point against Krejcovic in the quarterfinals, the biggest forehand return, and it hit the top of the tape. As a coach, sometimes, you know, you don't want to, you want a little margin for error, and, you know, against Borges, I'm sitting there going, no, 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 yes, 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 and against Krejcovic, I was going, no, 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 no. And, you know, but that's the kind of guy Torpegaard was, and he was out there at that time in the match, and with our season on the line, and he took it to Borges pretty good, and I think it was a 6-1. So, you know, we were at Final Four. Guys are excited, and, you know, now you've got UCLA, who's who you're going to play in the semifinals, and you want to be outdoors because you'd face them indoors earlier. And, you know, 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", 6'3". I mean, they're hitting you with, you know, some big men. And, you know, so we got off to, what was it, UCLA, 3 tiebreakers in a row for the doubles, which we won 2 of them.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think we won 2 of the tiebreakers out of 3 tiebreakers for the doubles point, and we slide by that doubles point, and we get off, take that momentum into, and we're looking good, and then the rains come, or the lightning, or whatever happened, and then we had to regroup, and we come back out, and we're doing all right, and then there's another 35-minute delay, and we come back, and UCLA dominates us for the first 7 or 8 or 9 minutes after that second break, and somehow we're able to regroup, and, you know, Seelig wins a great match. Again, you know, Schilling and Kronagy are on courts 1, 3, and 5, and I'm down at 2, 4, and 6, and, you know, there's a tough match going on with Zhu and Wolf. Hans kind of breaks away from Torpegaard and takes our doubles point lead away and makes the score 1-1 with them winning at 6, and it comes down to Seelig in a third set against Logan Staggs, and we're able to get that win right there. And I didn't get to see any points at the top, but you know, I thought Joyce played a great match from everything I've watched after the match and followed what the plan was for Joyce to do, which was a huge win because Cressy wasn't losing much at all at the 5 hole, and And it was a great win for Joyce. And we had a little bit of room because I think McNally had a break up 2-0 in the third on Keegan Smith when we sealed the deal 4-1 on UCLA. So
it's interesting because you talk about the matches. I'm pretty sure Wake Forest and Texas A&M were 4-3. But I thought your match was the more fascinating one. So many third sets. And like you mentioned, you know, in between the weather breaks after that second one, UCLA really jumped on everyone. I think they got breaks on all six courts or something crazy. You talked about freaking out at the draw, but having played UCLA already earlier in the year, was that a matchup your team was looking forward to? Is that something where you're able to, you know, pencil that down? We're getting our revenge on this one.
Well, I mean, you'd like to think that, but you know how good they are. And you look at them, they beat USC four times, and they beat Stanford, and, you know, they were a bee's nose away from beating Wake Forest in the finals of the National Indoors. You're a tennis junkie, and you're following all the results throughout the season because that's what you do. And but you know there are no easy outs in the round of 16 quarters of the semis. So at some point, we were going to have to play a Wake Forest or a UCLA or a Mississippi State or a Texas A&M because we played them before, and we played, you know, tight matches with all of them. So we knew, but you know, we knew our math was pretty good. You know, I take Torbegard all the time in a big team match, and he was up against Rhett Leakey, and then you had two freshmen playing in McNally and Keegan Smith. And earlier on in the year, McNally was up 3-1 in the third when the match ended at the National Indoors against Keegan Smith. So we felt we could win there, and you know, kind of like the matchup with Cressy and Joyce, because you know Cressy's used to dominating the play, and you feel his pressure all the time, and Joyce is the same way. So, you know, all of a sudden we're attacking Cressy's second serve on every second serve and coming to the net, and he's having to hit passing shots where he wants to be at the net holding serve, and, you know, Joyce is bringing the game at him, and he's not liking it as much as he would like to be playing a Kyle Selig and making Kyle Selig hit 39 passing shots 2 inches from the line to be able to beat him. So, you know, we felt pretty good there. And obviously, you know, Kyle Selig's a big part. So, you know, we felt we had opportunities. You know, Zhu and Wolf had played twice during the year and they were 1-1. So, you know, we weren't intimidated, but we knew that we would get our chances. But like in some of the matches we play in the Big Ten, we'll get 4 or 5 chances to win sets. But we knew that we would have a chance, you know, but it might only be 1 or 2 chances against UCLA, and that we were going to have to step up in the big moments and win. And, you know, you saw Kyle Selig step up in the big moments. You saw Torpegaard step up in the big moments down the break. You saw these guys, you know, stepping up and, you know, doing some things when they had the chance after we recovered from, like you said, giving up breaks after that second rain delay. And, you know, all of a sudden, we got our chance, but we weren't going to get many more chances than that. You know, Joyce needed to take care of Cressy in that game, and he took care of him. And Torpegaard needed to take care of Red Leakey, and he did. And Selig took care of his guy. And, you know, that set us on to the finals. And, you know, we were happy, but it was 9 o'clock at night. And, you know, it's tough when you've got to get massages and you've got to get ice baths and you've got to get things, and you're not getting back to till 10:15 or 10:30, and they've got to get fed. You've got the finals of the NCAA championship starting tomorrow at 4 o'clock. And, you know, kind of all of a sudden, you know, after every match, we're in my room at the NCAA tournament watching just hours and hours of video, and watching, you know, the Mississippi State play and then UCLA play and then Wake Forest play, and you're trying to put together a game plan in a short amount of time. And we hadn't seen Wake Forest until that day. We played them the year before in the semifinals of the National Indoors.
I remember the match well. 4-3, yeah. Torp over Frisokos.
Down 3-0 in the third, Torp was, and he came back to win that match in the third.
Down 3-0 in every set, it felt like.
Yeah, and, you know, again, we were, you know, again, you know, we lose a tight doubles point. We're up a break against Wake Forest in the final match, up a break in a one-set doubles match with Joyce and Wolf. We squander our opportunity there. We've got opportunities at two doubles. They have an opportunity to put us away at three doubles, serve for it. They get broken up love. Next thing you know, we're up 5-3 in the tiebreaker at three doubles. And, you know, it's kind of like the day before with UCLA, except everything went our way.
No kidding. And I do want to ask you, and this isn't meant to be a gotcha question, just I want to know, you know, what you're thinking about. That whole week, you talk about the match calculus for you guys, and it really was Torp at one, Selig and Joyce at 4 and 5, and then find one more. And so, you know, going into this match, you make the choice. You play Tim Siebert at 4, Selig and Joyce play 5 and 6. And, you know, again, looking at the calculus, it's Torp, 5 and 6, and then was it, you know, doubles is really, that's where we need to get our fourth point? And was that something your team felt going into the doubles point, or just how do you make that lineup decision?
I mean, we knew that we had a 50-50 chance to get the doubles point, and, you know, maybe a little more if it's at a neutral site, maybe a little less on their courts. But, you know, we knew that we needed that doubles point to make our dreams come true for sure. But we felt we had other, you know, other chances. And, you know, I look back to the 2009 match, and we had that Chase Buchanan, who got to 150 in the world ATP and who played Tomic in the finals of the U.S. Open. And, you know, in that match, Chase Buchanan lost, you know, it was a bad day for Chase when we played USC in 2009. So, you know, you start thinking that this is a pretty big stage, even though these freshmen have played in junior Wimbledon and junior French Open, like I said in the past, a little while ago. But, you know, some of those matches are played in front of 25 people. Now, all of a sudden, they're playing in front of 2,000 people. And, you know, it's a different feel. And they've never played in an environment like that before. And, you know, they ran away on Wolf and McNally's court, Wake Forest did. And we ran away with Joyce and Selig, you know, got their wins. And McNally and Wolf had tough days at the office. So we're down 3-2. And, you know, I've positioned myself at Zybert's court, and we're up 5-2 in the second set. And I'm thinking, you know, we've got a chance at this. And, you know, it's my job to walk him through and to get that set. That's what I get paid to do. And, you know, I didn't handle the business like I needed to handle the business, because we needed to get that match into a third set, which would have put a lot of pressure on, you know, anything can happen, as we've talked about many times in this conversation. When it gets to 3-3, you can throw everything out the window when a match is at 3-3 and everybody realizes that all eyes are on one court. So, you know, we really needed to get that 5-2 or that 5-3 game and get that set. Hopefully Torque pulls through in that tiebreaker. He was up a set on Gojo, and, you know, that's all we could have asked for with three after losing the doubles point, to be 3-3 playing national championship of one set. And for somehow, you know, I mean, Tim had been in and out of the lineup, and he's going to be a great player, a terrific player. Got the size, got the tools, he's going to be good. And you know, but it's a hard thing to ask an 18-year-old boy who just showed up from Germany in January.
Yeah, no kidding. But still, you know, you're on the precipice, such a incredible result. You know, you have some, how long does it take, you know, as a coaching staff, as a team? Is it something where, you know, you're watching the film the next day, you're going over what you could have done differently, or is it more just, you know, okay, that's the result, time to get back into recruiting and amping it up for the next year?
No, it was, you know, back in, you've got a horse in Torbegard who's wanting to make a run at the NCAA. You've got J.J. Wolf in it, and you've got Torbegard and Joyce, who early in the season, they were great doubles team, but we struggled a little bit with McNally and Wolf, so we had to break up Torpegaard and Joyce. And they were lucky, you know, I was lucky that I got away with it, because we broke them up and they dropped to 25-26 in the nation, probably one of the last three or four teams to make the NCAA field. So, you know, for Martin Joyce, who and some hero and has done great things, you know, you really wanted him to push through and get two wins. So our focus was only on the individual and the singles and the doubles event, and trying to help Martin and JJ and Torp become All-Americans and push for a national title. And, you know, it was nice to see Torpegaard and Joyce, because, like I said early on, you know, selfless players. They didn't complain one time when we split them up, and I think they were up in the top top six or eight in the country in February as a doubles team, and they had to take the hit and, you know, put Torpegaard with McDoo and put Joyce with Wolf at one, and had a pretty successful doubles run through the rest of the year. But, you know, it was nice to see Torpegaard and Joyce, who were able to still make the NCAA field, judging on, you know, on what they did in February, because they didn't play again. They, you know, after we left Georgia, they never played doubles again the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, again, an incredible run for both Torp and Joyce. I was doing some research for this, and I learned in all four of Torp's years in the NCAA singles draw, he lost to all four eventual champions, Shane, McDonald, Ty, and then this year Petro. So, you know, heck of a run for Torp. I was going to save this for later, but I'm going to ask you this now. Where does Mikhail Torpegaard rank on your all-time Buckeyes?
You know, we've had that conversation for the last 2 weeks, and, you know, it's you know, there's Torpegaard, and he's right up there with the Buchanans and the Rollas and the Stephen Monicas and the Brian Konyekos and
the Ty Tuckers.
The Justin Kronogis, Justin Kronogi had an unbelievable career, another selfless guy who ended up playing three as a senior and could have been complaining all the way, you know, being the one and two because he'd finaled the national indoors. But, you know, you've got guys like that. You've got Peter Kobelt that had a wonderful career. But, you know, when you final the doubles and you final the NCAA singles and you lead your team to the semifinals and you lead your team to the finals of the team event and all of the things that he did. I think he finaled the national indoors and doubles as well and lost to Red Leakey 1 year and I think semifinaled the national indoor as well. And, everything he's done for the program, you know, I put him right up there with Buchanan and Rolla, but, guys like Stephen Monica who finaled the, NCAA tournament and guys like Brian Konyaku, who was a national indoors champion, and Justin Kronogi, who's the career leader of all time singles and doubles victories in the history of Ohio State tennis. Torpegaard is, there's nobody that can say they're a better Buckeye, but there are some guys that can definitely say that they were every bit as good as Torpegaard. But in my opinion, he's one of the best, but, Peter Kobelt had an amazing career, and, I'm sure I'm missing some other guys.
Not selling anyone short. No.
Guys that did some great things for Ohio State tennis.
Absolutely. Well, then, I want to end here with a few quick-hitting questions, just some thoughts on, the miscellaneous tennis universe, but obviously big news in the college tennis community, Coach Brian Boland making his return to Baylor. Obviously, those Virginia teams, some of the, Ohio State's nemesis over the years. What are your thoughts on Coach Boland making his return?
It's great. I mean, college tennis needs guys like Brian Boland who are great at what they do, and he's a force to be reckoned with and one of the best tennis coaches of all time, and he'll have Baylor up and running just as Matt Canole did, who was a Hall of Fame coach. But, I know Brian Boland pretty well. The story's been out a couple of times. I was early on coaching at Ohio State. We were trying to make our move into the top 25 in the country. And, we scheduled Brian Boland at Indiana State. I think they were 18 in the country, and we were 21. And we go to Terre Haute, Indiana to play Brian Boland years and years and years ago. And the guy had beaten Georgia, I think, in the national indoors the year before. His team was making big runs and headlines, not on the sports page, but on the front page of the Terre Haute newspaper that morning. It was like first top 25 team comes to Terre Haute to play Indiana State tonight. And, he had all the buzz in Terre Haute, Indiana, and all of a sudden show up to play Indiana State, and he's got probably 200 chairs all around the bubble, and he had the place packed at Terre Haute, Indiana, for the match against Ohio State, and coming on the a 4-3 win at the in the last minute of that match, and all of a sudden, right after that year, he took the Virginia job, and he did some great things. I mean, even in Indiana State. I'm sure, what he did at Virginia was just phenomenal. phenomenal, and I'm sure that you know, Baylor's going to have some big success. But they had some great success with Matt Canole, who is truly a Hall of Fame coach, and who I'm sure he'll surface somewhere after he gets a little rest and realizes that he wants to be back in the game, and Matt Canole will turn a program around. But Brian Boland is phenomenal at what he does with you know, college tennis. And,
yeah,
he's tough to beat.
Yeah, how quickly will Baylor go on the Ohio State schedule? 1 year, 2 years?
You know, we'll talk. I haven't talked to Coach Boland since I beat us in the semifinals in 2017. You know, we've met each other at the U.S. Open, but a couple times, and I haven't talked to him. But you know, we'd like to play the best team, so I'm sure that Ohio State and Baylor will be getting it on in the next couple of years, and I think that they are a darn good team and great resources. And, you know, college tennis is great. And by no means with the no ad scoring and with what everything's going on in college tennis, I mean, there are some great teams that are, you know, in the sport. And if you want to be one of the best five teams in the country year in and year out, you're going to have to you're going to have to make sure that your athletes are improving every year, because there are just that, you know, as you saw, you know, Mississippi upsetting Stanford in the NCAA tournament, Minnesota beating Georgia and Oklahoma. I mean, there aren't any gimmies when you get to the final 32 of the NCAA tennis tournament. great places from around the world. So expensive to travel on the pro circuit, so most of these international kids are finding their way to college tennis, and it truly is a great level, and it truly is a minor league level of tennis. For, you know, if you can go out, I mean, if you look at all the guys in the past 10 years that have been able to dominate college tennis, they've been able to go on and be quite successful playing professional tennis.
I like it. And, you know, we have talked a lot of tennis on this podcast, but before we go, I want to do a quick rapid-fire segment to let our fans know, you know, what is Coach Ty Tucker all about? What is going on behind those sweatpants? And so, you know, we'll have a couple fun ones for you. I'll start with an easy one. Your favorite non-tennis athlete?
My favorite non-tennis athlete right now or of all time?
I want both.
I mean, it'd obviously be Michael Jordan. I didn't follow the NBA much at all, but Michael Jordan, who I would stop and watch and turn on a game, and you know, just be mesmerized on what he was able to do in the big moments. And you know, people said I was on the bandwagon when I was pulling to the Bulls, but about Michael Jordan, but. You know, anybody in Ohio State football right now, I'd have to say it's probably favorite athlete right now might be Nick Bosa. See what he can do, if he can live up to, you know, his brother Joey Bosa, and see what he can do. And, you know, Ohio State football, you know, Joey Pato. I'm a big Cincinnati Reds fan, so I like Joey Pato. The Reds, I'm actually be at the game tomorrow night against the Cardinals, so. You know, I like the Reds, and I like Ohio State football, and I'm sure that doesn't fit well with you. But,
no, I like
you it. I was living in Detroit when the team up north was having their way with Ohio State football. So I've been through the highs and the lows, and right now Ohio State football is it's super high, and that's my passion when I'm down with tennis, reading about all the recruiting and on 11warriors.com all the time. I even go to the Michigan site to get a couple good chuckles of them ripping the Buckeyes.
I like to hear it. Well, then, in that note, coach you model yourself most after?
You know, I don't model myself after anybody. I tried to, you know, learn some lessons that my dad taught me when he was working with me in tennis when I was younger. And, you know, I just think that you're going to get out of it once you put into it. And we talked about it earlier. I mean, I think my number one job is to go out there every day and find a way. You know, guys have trouble with their relationships with a significant other and all the things that happen in a, you know, a 5-6 month season, and be able to get those guys to understand that they've got to give everything they have for Ohio State today and every day, and if I'm asking them to do it, then I need to do it. So that's where I'm at with that. But
so maybe Dr. Phil. Secondary concern. Here's an interesting one. The Ohio State player you've coached that you wish you could play in a 2-out-of-3 set match over the years. Is there any player you've coached you're like, wow, I wish I could just beat the shit out of this kid? On the court, of course.
Yeah, maybe when you were a young coach. I mean, there would have been guys that you were recruiting that you didn't get that you'd like to take them out on the court and show them a thing or two because, you know, some people, when you're coming up and, you know, when I started this thing, we were, you know, ranked 100 in the country and hadn't won a Big Ten match in 3 years. So obviously you're knocking on the doors trying to recruit all the good players that can make a difference for your program. And, you know, there'd probably be some times where I was a little bent out of shape, a little bit sad because I thought I could help this guy develop and I wasn't getting the fair look. And with what Ohio State has to offer, it kind of, as a competitor, you want to get the best players for your team, but you know, nobody that I'd like to go out on the court and show them. I just, you know, I'm lucky and fortunate. You know, things have gone well for the Buckeyes. And, I've had guys that wanted to get better and wanted to listen and wanted to learn. And you know, I feel like, you know, I feel good. I feel that a lot of coaches around the country and peers and think that, you know, Ohio State's a place where guys actually develop. And I think that the coaching staff and does a great job at Ohio State developing players to get them, you know, accolades while they're in college and get them ready to play some tennis at the next level if that's what they choose to do.
Well, the answer I was looking for is I would beat Torp 0-0 or just something crazy like that. So what gut feeling, 1991, you play Torp. What's the score?
4-5 Torp.
That's what I like to hear.
4-5 Torp.
Unless there's – I bet there's a big hook in the second set one way or the other. Someone's hooking
something. I mean, somebody was going to try and win. You know, it's – Torp is – Torp's a tough guy, mentally tough guy who likes to win. And that's what you need. And, you know, it's been a great, great run coaching Big Torp. And he's – I look forward to watching him and, you know, him over the next 18 months trying to navigate.
Okay. I mean, I agree. It's going to be so fun to watch. But I have two more quick ones for you.
All right.
Favorite match you've ever been a part of?
Favorite match I've ever been a part of? You know, it was probably, believe it or not, it was probably – you know, I think we've got some crazy record. I think, you know, we've got the longest home winning streak in the history of college athletics.
Of course.
And I would say it's when John Roddick in Oklahoma came in and we had 700 people and the fire marshals were only letting people come into the match if somebody left. So there was a line outside trying to get in because I think we were four in the country and they were one in the country. And we ended up losing that match 7-6 in the third after Mecca having two match points, or after having one match point. And I think we'd won 202 matches in a row. And yeah, they broke our streak on that night.
What an answer.
Just the atmosphere and the way that Ohio State handled it and brought probably 300 people from the crowd out onto the court to the adjacent court to watch the last 15 or 20 minutes of that match was just, I looked around and people were hanging off lights and people were wedged in everywhere. And, you know, from starting at Ohio State Tennis when we played in a four court wooden hut and trying to give little Debbie snacks away to get people to come to the match. Now all of a sudden there's people in every nook and cranny. And, you know, we had the right guy out there for that match and we had the chance and we didn't, but that was probably, the match that I remember forever. And, you know, one of the best matches I've ever been a part of. And it was great. I mean, it was truly, I'm getting a little bit mad right now because I think we might be like 260-1 in our last 261 matches at home. So since that loss, we've won every home match, and you know we played the Georgias and we played the Texas A&M. We've played a big time schedule, so it's not like we're scheduling the Twig, Ohio University Zanesville, and they're coming into play us every day. You know, it's not like we're not playing some big competition, but that's been, that's probably the best match. When we talk to people and the regulars that come to matches, I mean, that's the match that everybody talks about. So, you know, it's been, another good one was probably Texas A&M this year with Torbjørn Rinderneck with the all eyes on him. And we're playing Texas A&M. It was truly one of the best four teams in the country this year. And we slid by them 4-3, so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I always think with the great coaches, they do remember the losses more than the wins. For me, you know, all of my back in the day matches, I remember, I played club tennis sophomore year. We lost to a Florida team that we had, and it was just embarrassing. So I totally sympathize with that feeling. But okay, the last question I want to ask you, and this is fitting because we've had a lot of Michigan-Ohio State banter on this podcast. If you could replay a win over Michigan or winning the ITA indoors, which would you prefer to redo? Just any win over Michigan or just taking that ITA indoor?
I would probably review the match in my second season where we hadn't beat Michigan in years and years and years and years, and it was my second year as a head coach and playing against Mark Mason. We had double team match point. We lost that match. That would be the match that I would wish I could pop it in when I get home on the video system and watch that again and go back and, see those guys that really helped Ohio State tennis make the jump. And guys like Bob Wellstein and Chris Porter and Andrew Carlson and Phil Metz and guys like that who were part of that match who, you know, didn't get to the success that they deserved, early on, like the guys in the past 10 years. You go to Ohio State Tennis now and you play at home in a beautiful facility and against big matches and the fans are out and they get all of the love and all of the respect. And, there were guys out there that were just, we talked about the Ohio State-Michigan match like we do for every Ohio State-Michigan match. And we hadn't won in years. And, we had a chance to beat them at home. And like I said, double team match point, they ended up sliding by us. That was a match. The wins, you don't really
you know, the IPA National Indoors, that was a nice win to win a national title and beat Virginia and beat USC, or who are two teams that have beaten us a fair amount of times in big matches. And, you know, it was great to win that. But, you know, I think back of some other matches that, you know, make me smile, or, you know, sometimes I replay them in my head. And, there's some matches that, you know, some turning points in our, you know, there was a great one against University of Tennessee the year they went to the finals. We got sent there early in my career. It might have been that second year as well. And we played Tennessee to 4-2 at Tennessee in the round of 32. And it was just an absolute dogfight. They got away with the win. But, you know, I think back at that. But for the most part, none of the wins, we don't even really think about them. There's actually a funny one that's funny, because we were in the middle of building that 100, you know, we were probably at 140 wins in a row on our home streak, and we had, you know, we might have been 3 or 4 in the country. We had Mississippi with Billy Chadwick coming in, and they were like 7 or 8 in the country.
Of course.
And the legend and the story goes, the crowd's there, everybody's there, warm-ups are going on, and there's a power outage in Columbus, and the match doesn't get played. So, you know, the joke with all the coaches was that I got a little bit too nervous, and I went in the back and shut off all the lights. So maybe that's true, maybe it isn't. But that match didn't end up getting played, and we sat around for 3 or 4 hours, and the there was an accident at High Street, and our grid was on that thing, and they couldn't get the power back on. So fans sat there from 5:30 to 9 o'clock, hoping that there was going to be a tennis match. And it didn't, but it kept our streak alive. So I was happy.
I love it. Yeah. And you got to cut the cord sometimes. Do what you have to do to keep that streak alive. I love it. Well,
you have to.
Yeah. Well, Coach, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Obviously, as we mentioned before, anyone who follows college tennis obviously knows about you and all you've given to the game. So thank you for your contributions. Thank you for, you know, making the Buckeyes so entertaining to watch, even for a Michigan guy like me. And, you know, I wish you a ton of success to you and your Buckeyes moving forward. But feel free to throw us a win every now and then.
Appreciate the time you spent and what you do for college tennis. And, you know, on the second part, nobody gives us any wins. And if you're going to beat Michigan, or going to beat Ohio State or Illinois or anybody in the Big Ten or anybody in the schedule we play, you got to beat them. Nothing's given. So
I love
it. I'm sure that they're already, we've already had 4 or 5 days of summertime practice, and I'm sure the team up north is trying to get back after it and dreaming of next season and having Ohio State come into, I think they call it the slaughterhouse up there. And, I'm sure they already have it circled, but they're not the only ones that have it circled.
Yeah, I love it. I'll be the one in the gray sweatpants, you know, screaming my head off. So, you know, you can look.
If you're going to do that, you know, 10 years ago, they had a Dress Like Ty Tucker Day promotion. I don't know if you've checked that out.
I've seen some photos.
The little boy who won that game with his gray sweats and his paper tucked in them, and they were oversized and a little bit dirty. So he ended up winning the prize package.
That's hilarious.
I hope to keep winning some matches and get a chance to be on your show again.
No, you are always welcome. But yeah, we will definitely talk to you soon, Coach. Drive safely and take care.
Thanks for all the good stuff listening.
Yeah, of course. Take it easy.
All righty. Bye. Bye-bye. The final thing is that now I'm not afraid of anything. Cause they gonna kill anyone that feels so powerful. They chip out your eye, rid your skin of everything is confusing. You will be good, but you will be more. You will be good, but you will be more. You will be good, but you will be more.
future.